But apparently they're not. Apparently they're over their limits. But it's hard, isn't it? You know, laws can be tough. But laws can be quite funny as well. So I was just reading recently about Henry VIII, who apparently put in a beard law, so you had to pay a beard tax. So if you've got a beard, you have to pay a monthly tax. And that law's never been taken off the rules. So apparently it's still valid. So, you know, we're in trouble. But I mean, I think during lockdown and over the COVID period, the pandemic, there's been kind of added laws and rules, haven't there? And sometimes, if you're like me, sometimes I think, oh, I don't really like laws. Let's be really honest. I find laws quite difficult. I think, oh, are they there to restrict me? But that's not the case, is it? Laws are really there. A lot of the COVID rules that came in place were actually there, not to just restrict us, but to bring us freedom, to keep people well, to keep people healthy. To keep a bed in the hospital free, so that if you did get sick, you could go and take it up. But in our culture, we love our freedom, and often we kick back against laws and against rules, because we've kind of said that freedom is about being able to do what you want to do. I want to be free to do what I want to do when I want to do it, and then life will be better. But I think most of us realise, if we stop and really think about it, so actually, the more we get to do what we want, if that applies to everybody, it doesn't actually mean that we're a happier society, or even individually. Now, I've got a garden at home, and there's a fence around our garden. And there are times when I say to my children, I say, remember, you're not allowed to go outside of that fence, in particular a back gate that we've got. And there was one time where one of my children, who I won't name, I'll just say it was Unit 3, you know the order of my children. I thought he'd gone out the garden. So the gate was open, he was gone. And I'm a very relaxed, horizontal person. I'm not the one in our marriage who gets worried about these things. But even I was a bit worried because I couldn't find him anywhere. And I went round the back of the house and I was calling his name. And eventually, a little cheeky face popped out back in our garden. You know, surprise, I was here. And I was kind of a mixture of relief and annoyance and pride in my son's ability to hide from me. And I think my kids often, you know, will find some of my rules restrictive. You know, how much time they're allowed on the Xbox. Apparently I'm a bit restrictive with that time. Bedtime, oh, apparently, Dad, you're sending us to bed far too early. And, you know, there's that sense sometimes that, you know, my kids can be like, oh, Dad, you know, you're spoiling my life with your rules. But you know what, when those quiet moments, you know, when they kind of get those moments of quiet and peace, they do happen occasionally, and I sit down and I look at one of my children in the eye, and I can say to them, do you know what, this fence, this rule in our house is for your good. I have this rule because I love you. You may not always understand it or even like it, but it's there because I want you to be really free, really free. And so the Bible speaks of law and freedom in a bit of a different way to the way that culture has defined it. And when God says, I'm going to give you some laws to live by, it's not like he's a mean father trying to restrict you and make life difficult for you, but actually he's a loving father. He looks at us with that tenderness that you do with your children. And he says, I don't want you to be harmed, but I want you to be free to be all that I have made you to be, both individually and also collectively for us as a church. But as I've said, keeping rules is, I find it hard. You may not, I find it hard at times. And I can therefore look at my children and I can feel sympathy. I can think, yeah, I know, I find it hard too. And there's times when I can't or maybe even won't keep the rules. And there's times when I look at some of God's commandments as well in the Bible. And I think, oh, I don't know if I can keep that rule, or I've broken that. I've broken one of God's moral laws this week, today, in the last hour. And society will tell us that those times when we keep on doing things we know we shouldn't, we'll talk about things like addiction. They'll say, well, you know, I'm addicted to something. I'm addicted to scrolling through my phone. I'm addicted to approval or what I get from it, or I overeat and you're addicted to food, or you undereat and control your diet, but you're still addicted to food, but just in a different way, or addicted to
to lust. Society uses that term, but we don't see that the use of that term in the Bible very often. Or we don't. We don't see the word addiction coming up. We have a different word, and it kind of means the same thing biblically. And it's the word slavery. The Bible says it's slavery. And actually, if we're therefore struggling with those areas that society might call addiction, and by the way, I do believe there are medical addictions, and that is true. So there are definitely categories where there are medical aspects to people's challenges. But it does leave us with a challenge as Christians when we're struggling sometimes with, I understand what God's saying, I understand his rules, but I just can't seem to do it. I seem like a failure. I feel guilt. And that gives us a real dilemma, because the Bible says, well, if you become a Christian, then you're free. You're free to follow God. You're free to obey him. It's not just obeying him because we have to obey all these rules to please God. It's because we get to. Just like a child will want to please their parents, will want to be in a relationship with them where actually things work well. And so there's times when we struggle. I think as Christians, perhaps if you're not a Christian, you'll recognize that sense of, I know that this is what I'm meant to do. I know that some of my actions are hurting other people or myself, but I just don't seem to have the power to change. And so I want to look at a little bit of this concept of law, of rules, and freedom. And to do that, we're actually going to go to the Bible, and we're going to go to the Old Testament today. Ooh, so if you have a Bible, dust off the Old Testament. You can open it or open your app, and we're going to be in Exodus 32. Exodus chapter 32, right at the beginning of the Bible. And this is where the context is the Israelites, so God's people, have been in Egypt. Do you remember how they got to Egypt? They got there through Joseph and his amazing Technicolor dream coat, because there was a famine and they ended up going there. And the people of Israel then expanded. They became massive in number, millions of them. And they were slaves in Egypt. And then God miraculously brought them out of slavery. Do you remember the story? Yeah, there was a Red Sea, and Moses parts the Red Sea, and they go through the Red Sea out into freedom, into the desert. And when they get to the desert, God says, before you enter the land that I promised you, just pause. And I'm going to give you some rules to live by. I'm going to give you some commandments. Rules and laws that will bring you freedom. Rules that will help you see what it's like to really be free and to flourish under the God who made you. The loving Father who made you. And in Exodus 32, we see, just before Exodus 32, it says in Exodus chapter 20, Moses, their leader, their figurehead, goes up onto the mountain and he receives some laws. And he gets this summary of the law in 10, okay, 10 laws. We know them as the 10 commandments. So we'll put them up on the screen, let's read them. They're in a bit oldie English, so if you can read these with me, just to refresh us as to what they are. So we'll start with number 1. Thou shalt not have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor thy father and thy mother. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet. Brilliant, thank you very much. And so those are the summary of God's moral law. And we know that because Moses spends the next 12 chapters, okay, so if you want to read some law, read Exodus 20 to 32. It's solid rules. Moses is up on that mountain 40 days, 40 nights, receiving God's law, writing it down. And we get to Exodus 32, and Moses has been on that mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. And the people who he'd left down there, I don't think he told them. You know when you kind of say, hey, I'm going off somewhere and I'll be back, you know, call me if I'm not back. I'm not sure Moses knew that it would take that long, okay? And the people start to get concerned. And we see this in Exodus 32, verse 1. It says this: when the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron, that's his brother, and they said, "Come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us out of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him. He might have died. He might have gone off and joined, I don't know, another nation." Whatever it might be, these people are turning around and saying, "Hang on a minute, we're in trouble. Moses has led us out. We're in this desert. There's enemies all around us. We are exposed. We could be attacked any moment. And our leader, our figurehead, has gone. We need something, someone else, to keep us safe." And you wonder whether there's an element of what they're thinking about God. You know, God's led us this far, but now he's gone silent. Can we really trust God? Is he actually ever going to speak to us again? And so we get to the next verses, verse 2 to 4, and Aaron responds. So he could have said, "No, guys, just have faith. Be patient. Wait. God will provide." But instead he says this, he answers them, "Take off your gold earrings that your wives, sons and daughters are wearing and bring them to me." And so the people took off their earrings and they brought them to Aaron. And he took what they handed him and he made it into an idol in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Then they said, that's him and the other leaders, "Israel, these are your gods who brought you up out of Egypt." Wow. Amazing, isn't it? We look at that and think, building an idol. I would never worship a calf. So there's a lot of kind of contextual stuff there about the time when David was. But that's what they did. They made this calf. And the rest of the chapter talks about they start to dance around it. They start singing and dancing. And there's this huge party going on, this worship party around this idol. And into that party walks Moses. And he's holding those two stones with God's law. And he sees and he walks, and you imagine it, he walks into the middle of the scene and everyone goes quiet because, oh no, Moses is back. And he's looking pretty angry. And in verse 19, it says this: when Moses approached the camp and he saw the calf and the dancing, his anger burned. And he threw the tablets out of his hands, breaking them to pieces at the foot of the mountain. He's angry. And so we've got three things I want to just bring out in the short time we've got about God's law and our response. And they're three P's, okay? So just to help you this morning, in case you're feeling a bit sleepy, we've got three P's. The first of them is perfection. And I don't know if you think about perfection. I'm probably looking at me up here, it doesn't help you with thinking about perfection. But there are things that we do think of as perfect, aren't they? It's kind of wired into us. I'm a football fan. I think of the Barcelona 2010 team. Footballing perfection. Sorry, not Liverpool. Any Liverpool fans here, I can see it's not there at the level of Barcelona. Or what about, was it Rosie and Giovanni getting a perfect 10 on Strictly? You know, nailed the dance, perfect 10. And we love it. There's something in human beings that we respond to perfection. And religions all know that. Religions around the world will all point to this perfect being outside of themselves who deserves worship. And in our culture nowadays, we'll say, we're beyond all that. We're not religious. But actually, there's gods. They just look a bit different. The God tends to be us. We see my standards as perfect. My judgment is perfect. My truth is perfect. So we have our gods, they just don't look like golden calves. But as well as knowing there's perfection, we also know when we fall short. My footballing skills and my dancing skills definitely fall short of perfection. But the Israelites also knew over time that they fell short as well. Within days, as we read through the rest of Exodus, when we'll get to the story soon, but Moses comes back and they receive the law. But we see it even here. They're told by Moses to wait. They're given a promise that God's taken them into a land. And within 40 days, they've given up on it. They've forgotten it. And what happens? They turn their back on God. They say, well, we need another idol. And we need another God. And that, do you know what? We think, surely they'll learn their lesson. But no, that's the story in the entire Old Testament. Time and again, God's people turn their backs on God. God calls them to a standard. They fail to meet that standard. And then they have to go into the cycle of sacrificing animals, praying for forgiveness, and being back in relationship with God. And I don't know about you, but I look and I sometimes read and I think, oh, that's just pathetic. 40 days and you're already calling me. And then I look at myself and I think, wow, there's parallels there. There's times when I've heard a message from God. I've sat in a sermon like this, and yet within hours of walking out those doors, I can be doubting God. Has God really spoken? Is he really powerful? Can I really overcome this thing in my life which I just seem to be struggling with and don't have the power to overcome? Is God really going to answer my prayers? Sometimes we can complain. Maybe sometimes like my children do, you know, the standard's unfair. You shouldn't be expecting that of me, God. And yet actually deep down, I believe we need to know that there is a standard, that God is perfect. There is a great security that God's wisdom, God's justice, God's love is perfect. If he kind of compromises on that, then we are all in trouble. So we kind of know that we need this perfect standard, even if we don't like it sometimes. But like Israel, we've also experienced that despair of trying to achieve perfection, and we can't. So that's the first P. All right, wasn't too bad, was it? First P, perfection. Second P, penalty. And just reading this word just brought up, oh, penalty, car penalty notices. Has anyone received, I won't ask show of hands, if you've received the penalty notice, you know that moment you go and look on your car and there's a yellow thing stuck on it? And a clamp. Oh, you've had a go. Okay. Oh, okay. There's been clamps involved. I've never had a clamp involved. But there's. I probably should have done. But and the other question I'd ask is: anybody paid it up front without kind of trying to argue the case? Anyway, I won't ask for a show of hands. There's something in me. I'm just like, oh, there's always a reason why I should appeal this claim and try and get it half. Anyway, oversharing. But I think that it's important to know that when a law is broken, we know, don't we, that there's a penalty. And we know that. And in this passage, the penalty for the Israelites is quite shocking. It's destruction. God comes and he takes out a large number of Israelites. In verse 35, see if I can get up on the screen. The Lord struck the people with a plague because of what they did with the calf Aaron had made. I mean, I'm not going to go into the ins and outs of that, but that's pretty shocking, isn't it? That's the penalty, verse 35. There's another penalty. And God says to them, actually, you can't enter the promised land yet. Because of your sin, you're going to spend 40 years wandering around the desert until you're in the promised land. That's another penalty. A perfect law. An infinitely holy God, infinitely perfect God, means that there are consequences. In fact, there are infinite consequences for disobeying him. Not because he's an angry tyrant who just is out to demand our love, but actually because he loves us that much. God is serious about sin, about his perfect standards, and this is the hard message of Christianity. You know, have those moments where you explain the gospel to someone? It's hard. Actually, there's a penalty for disobeying God, for not following him, and it's death. The Bible talks about that as an eternal death, an eternity of separation without him. And this isn't like the Old Testament God who's angry and then we get the nice, cuddly, loving Jesus who comes along in the New Testament. No, no.